Step into Mind Matters, where we reveal the high-stakes world of CEOs, from their first-day jitters to game-changing strategies, and equip you with invaluable insights and practical advice essential for your personal growth and leadership journey. And now, Mind Matters.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Kendall Raessler, your host today. And thank you so much for joining our podcast, as we have an incredible guest with us. He's the CEO of Buckeye Credit Union. Please welcome us to get some insights and the journey that Michael Abernathy has had so far in his career. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so great to have you here, Michael. And I wanted to ask you a couple questions, but before I jump into the questions, I'd like our listeners to understand a little bit more about your background. So if there's anything you can share about your background and your journey to how you got to where you are today, and any milestones that are really memorable for you, so we can share this with our listeners.
Boy, that could take a while, so I'll try to condense it. But realistically, I came to Buckeye State Credit Union almost on accident in 2016. I had left banking altogether. I had been with big banks. I'd worked for JP Morgan Chase. I'd worked for PNC Bank. And in 2015, I just said enough. I went into business for myself. I had a company that was doing pretty well, actually. And then tragedy kind of struck. My daughter at the time was 3 years old, had a very significant accident, broke her elbow really bad, going down a flight of stairs. Required a massive reconstructive surgery. And then the medical bills started coming in, and it was just more than we could bear. And I had to get back into the job market. And I just found, wow, there's not a lot of jobs out there. And just a funny thing, you know, a person that I just kept a good close relationship with when I was at PNC had just happened to leave and took this position as a senior vice president over at Buckeye State Credit Union. She happened to call me and wanted me to take over overseeing the retail branch network. And I just happened to be like, yeah, that sounds fantastic. And, you know, from there, I just learned maybe Buckeye was not exactly in the financial position that would really inspire anybody to join them. And really required a lot of attention and care. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But, you know, that's really where I got introduced to not only Buckeye, but credit unions, because there are differences between banks and credit unions. But it was just really accidental, because I had really thrown up my hands and said, you know what, I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I look at the generations in my family. You know, my dad's an entrepreneur. My grandparents, my grandmother on my dad's side, my grandfather on my mom's side, they've all been entrepreneurs. They've all been self-employed. And I just felt that call. So to go do it felt like the natural next step. And to find myself in this situation was very interesting and unique.
That is interesting. So, you know, I heard something that jumped out to me right away to you is that, you know, Buckeye was not really in the position that was attracting a lot. So were you brought in to change it around? Was that your first initiative? Were you like a restructuring CEO, or were you, help me understand that more. Help our listeners learn.
So when I initially came in, the credit union had lost a lot of money. They were going through a massive transition and they were going through political turmoil. So the credit union at this point in 2024 is 91 years old and has not seen a ton of leadership turnover over those years. It wasn't until about 2014 that they saw like their first set of turmoil where, okay, some of the old order was starting to retire out and new people were coming in. And there was a big clash and collision, and the credit union started losing money. And by the end of 2016, the credit union had lost $3 million in 3 years, and they were on the verge of insolvency. So I came in right in the middle of it. And my job at that point was, we need to change culture. The culture is really, really bad. Doing this in the middle of political infighting, trying to gain influence. And while this is all happening, You have regulators, a deposit insurer, who are all looking at the internal books and all of the inner workings and saying, this thing is on fire. It's going to burn down. And they're trying to put a fire out. I'm out there trying to change culture. And it was a mess. Yeah. And so it was all about just, let's tackle one thing at a time. And the best way to try and address any of these massive issues, because look, you're not going to fix financial problems if you have a massive culture issue. So it was, look, let's go ahead and let's start getting people bought in to a new culture. And let's make some tough decisions for people that aren't going to buy into that culture. Let's help them find their next thing. And we went through this process, and it was about a 6-month process, and it was very difficult. And some people bought in, some people didn't, and we helped them move out. And then around September of 2016, the CEO was replaced, and the person who had brought me in was elevated to CEO. I moved into the senior vice president role. And this is the first time we really got a good look at the financials, where we were given access to just see what's going on. So we had done a pretty good job of really getting the culture moving in a positive direction, getting everybody pulling in the same direction. And we noticed, wow, we are in a massive amount of debt. We have, and for folks that are in business will understand this, our fixed assets and the depreciation were drowning us. Like, there was just, it didn't matter how much money we were bringing in gross revenues. Just these reoccurring costs that were sitting in our fixed assets were drowning us.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at it like, how do we dig out of this? And we made the decision, we have to empty it out and just bottom ourselves out, which gave us no wiggle room. It's like, if we bottom ourselves out, we have nowhere else to go. We're at the bottom. Our regulators will give us no more wiggle room. We have another losing month. We're toast. But it clears a pathway for us to actually get out of this mess. And so in December of 2016, we finish emptying everything out. We actually go and pay off our debt. And from there, we made a small profit, and then another. And then we just snowballed it, and we haven't had a loss since. And so we just focused on one foot in front of the other. And from there, we just kept pushing the culture, and we focused on this mindset of the little engine that could, and just having a little bit of a chip on our shoulder and just proving everybody wrong. And everybody rallied around it, and people felt like, hey, we're not losers. We're not this credit union that is bound to fail. We're not just running out the clock. We're actually pulling through this thing. We're mm-hmm. actually fixing it, and we're part of it. And it really built some pride in the brand. It really built some pride in working here. And what we found is that our membership, which is our client base, was also feeling it. And now all of a sudden, they are feeling a deeper loyalty to it. They're out referring their family and friends where they weren't before. But a lot of it, and I'm sure, you know, this is kind of evolving the conversation, is we had to change some of our business practices. So we have to change the culture internally to more of a, hey, we have to work together and pull in the same direction. And there's a lot more to it than that. That's a whole show by itself. We had to then make some tough financial decisions. But then once we kind of got the foundation built, okay, mm-hmm. we had to start saying, how do we want to do business? And this is really where I started to focus in and made a lot of these business decisions of, we're not going to beat PNC, Chase, Huntington, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and being these big corporate bankers and commercial bankers. Mm-hmm. How can we not be less than, we're not going to be better than in certain areas, but how can we be different than? And this has really been our mantra since, is focusing on being different than and being a true alternative and focusing in on being the alternative. And what we found is there is a a group of people in this country that have been just left behind. Blue collar workers have been left behind in this country. Folks that, you know, fall into that low to moderate income, folks that have maybe not horrible credit scores, but not great credit scores, folks that are sitting between 600 and 680, and the banks won't lend to them because they're focused on that very prime credit score. And so we started devising ways, how can we lend to these folks and do business with them and help them reestablish themselves and help them get to better interest rates while still protecting ourselves. And so again, we just kept snowball effecting and taking some good, you know, strategic risk, and it paid off. And that's what, you know, as a businessman, that's what it's all about. And so I'll kind of leave that part of the story there, because I'm sure you want to hear about getting to being the CEO and how that went.
Well, absolutely. Our listeners will want to listen. It's very interesting, because in order to take the culture that you had to change, and that is a huge task with a lot of plates to spin, so to use as in that example, but then not only your inside, but then having to take your customer to decide which customer you want and how to get there. The stress must have been quite challenging. I would like to ask you, what advice would you give a new CEO that's walking into your position about your internal feelings on that, how you felt about that, how you handled that, how you prioritized it?
So when I became CEO, I'd already been here for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so I had to fight the temptation of, I already know what's best. I already know what I want to do. I was a senior vice president and I oversaw lending, sales, collections, and marketing. So I already oversaw a big part of the credit union, but what I didn't oversee was finance, accounting, operations, HR. There was a big portion of the company that I didn't have a strong knowledge about. So I needed to take a step back, and I took 90 days. And it was just try to let go of the areas that I had overseen, hand it off. Mm-hmm. Don't feel guilty about handing it off. Let it go. And see the company as a whole. Don't see it as those individual departments, but see it holistically. Because that is the job now. You have to see it holistically. And you have to see how the pieces actually fit together and how they work together. Mm-hmm. It's very easy that if I'm the head of lending and I'm the head of sales, I'm the head of retail, how all those pieces intertwine. Well, now I have to add in all these other departments and how they intertwine. You have to take at least 90 days and you have to absorb it. And you have to take the time to now talk to these other departments, not just your department heads, but go talk to people inside of those departments and understand what they're doing, because it doesn't matter how big or small your institution is. You could be an institution that has 70 employees. You could be an institution that has thousands of employees. It doesn't matter. You have to then take a step back and see things holistically. And you have to be able to steer the ship from all sides, not just one side in particular that you're comfortable with. So I don't know if that completely answers your question, but that's my take on it, was take a step back, get your hand out of the cookie jar, and think and view things holistically and guide, influence, and maneuver, rather than just doing things yourself and pushing in all these areas what you're looking for, rather than, you know, get the feedback, make decisions based on some of that feedback, what you're seeing, and have an idea in your mind where you want this thing to go. And that's just in the first 90 days. Now, obviously, you build strategic plans. And then for myself, I build a much larger comprehensive plan that goes out 5 to 10 years. But in that first 90 days, get your feet on the ground, get away from your area. Now, if you're new to the company, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Get out there and don't just, yes, you got to talk to your department heads, but actually get into the areas and talk to the people at the ground level, or else you're not going to truly know what is going on inside the company.
That is great advice. And you know what? I can definitely see your entrepreneurial side come through as well, the way you tackle that. And I love that because a lot of CEOs are entrepreneurial, starting up, working their way through, and they get told a lot of stuff that they think is important, and they really don't know what's important until they're in it and find out later on, right? A lot of wasted time. Did you have any mentors that helped you through this? Not looking for names, but was there anybody that mentored, or was it just your years of experience? Tell me how you use that.
It's a funny story here. I'll make it real brief. When I broke in, I remember my first big promotion. I was working for a bank called First Merit Bank, and I became a personal banking manager, and this was in 2004. And I get to my location, and I'm down in Amish country in Holmes County, Ohio. And I get to my office, and waiting for me is the customer service manager, which is hilarious because it had nothing to do with customer service. They're actually operations managers. And this was a 20-year veteran, sits down, meets me and introduces herself, shakes my hand, and we get talking. She goes, tell me, what do you want to do with your career? What do you think is the end game for you? And I am 24 years old at the time. And I have no fear. I have big ambition. And I say, I want to be the head of everything. I want to be the president. I want to be the CEO. It would have been in her right to smile, laugh, pat me on the head and say, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of walk away. But she took me serious. And she goes, well, how are you going to do that? And as an ignorant 24-year-old, I outlined this very vertical, stupid, ignorant plan. and I can laugh about it now and realize how silly it was, because I truly had no idea, but I thought I did. And she goes, you're probably not going to make it that way. Let me give you some advice. And she outlined a very good plan. And I took it to heart. Now, it wasn't that she held my hand all the way through. She laid the foundation. And I had a lot of bumps in the road. If you look at my resume, it looks like I followed it to a T. There's just a lot of stories in between in the cracks where there was a lot of struggle, a lot of failure, a lot of risk, a lot of failure, but there were successes in there. But I tried to follow that path that eventually she was right, that led to the seat that I'm in. Now, I can also sit here and say that as a mentor, I leaned very heavily into my father. I view my father very affectionately because I've watched him have great success. I've watched him have great failure. I've watched him make $1 million and I've watched him lose $1 million. Mm-hmm. And I've learned from his great success. I've learned from his failure. Mm-hmm. I've seen that he has no fear to bet on himself and that he will work tirelessly to succeed. I've seen the lengths that he will go, waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go work a paper route. You know, when I was a child, he would wake up at 2 a.m. to deliver USA Today newspapers, then be done and go work a normal job, and then go do another side business in the evening. And the guy would operate on no sleep. But it was what it took for him to just build up enough money and equity to continue to be that entrepreneur, to be able to build a business, then sell a business, to have more money, to buy another business or to start another business, and to continue having that success. And it was great lessons that I learned from it. But I also saw where, hey, maybe he took too great of a risk. He didn't think it all the way through, and he had to start back at ground zero and do it again. So I learned a lot from that, and learned that not all risks are worth it, and that you got to understand, what do you gain and what's at risk truly, and is it worth it? So I would say that those are some great examples of what I consider my greatest mentors.
You know, those are fantastic ones, because, you know, I believe we all should look at our parents as mentors and learn from them and mistakes and the people that you brought into it. That brings you close to your heart, but also brings it from the outside in. which gives you strengths on both sides. And it also brings a challenge. When I listen to you about your father, I listen to you about your business, and I go, you know, your business right now is more based on consumers versus business debt. Is that correct?
We do commercial lending, but it's not our main crux. We focus on Main Street consumers.
Okay. So when you have to make that decision and had to make that niche and look at that, how did you make that decision that was your big push forward? Or was that the bank's culture already? Did you make that change?
I made that change. I have a commercial lending background. I do have a passion for it. I do very much like commercial lending, but I also understand that at our scale, that we are not going to be able to compete with, you know, again, Chase, PNC, Bank of America, the biggest of the big. Mm-hmm. They're going to win those deals. So how can we compete in that space? Well, we join a coalition and we buy pieces, and so we participate in larger deals. So we do hold some pieces of larger deals. But again, my focus is not on being better than. I want to avoid being less than. So how can I be different than? Mm-hmm. And different than is, let's go all in on the consumer. Not just, you know, let's not focus on the mass affluent. Look, everybody wants to bank the mass affluent. They have their choice of the litter. It doesn't mean we don't. There are a lot of mass affluent members that we have because they believe in what we're doing philosophically. They see how we are helping, you know, the underserved in our community, and they want to be part of it. But they are not who we are marketing to, and they are not who we are trying to attract. We are going after that blue-collar worker who has been left behind, and we are focusing all of our effort to make sure that those that are underserved are getting the attention that they deserve. And we are not catering to those Wall Street investors. We are putting all of our focus and attention on the Main Street consumer. And that is, to us, we have a singular focus and mission, which is giving us the success we have, because they know that we are here for them. And we are out there getting referrals, and we're getting a lot of attention because that's what we stand for. And we have just decided, look, we're not going to spread ourselves thin. We're not going to try and be a lot of different things. We are going to focus on that target. If we get business in other realms, awesome. We love it. But we know that there is that segment of the population that desperately needs our help. They want to do business. We know they're good people, and we're going to go out there and we're going to provide a service to them that others won't.
I like that. Keep your eye on the target and focus, focus, focus. It's easy for a lot of CEOs to drop off of that and lose that focus. But you could be so focused that it becomes very difficult to do a balance of work and your life. Mm-hmm. So how do you handle that? How do you handle your work-life balance? Can you help me with that?
Great question. The early years at Buckeye, it was a lot of long hours.
Yeah.
We assembled a fantastic team. And the one thing that I am incredibly proud of here is that the senior leadership team that I have here at Buckeye, I will put up against anybody. We have all been together at a minimum of 7 years. They have all been very loyal to this company. They have had opportunities to leave. They haven't. I have a couple that I think are going to make fantastic CEOs someday. And I think within the next year or two, there's definitely one that is going to get an opportunity, and he has earned it, and he deserves it. But we stay together, and we trust each other. So what we do for each other is, man, you need to take time away, take time away. We pass within our organization. It has a fancy name, but look, it's unlimited PTO. You need to take time off, take time off. And what we find is people don't abuse it at all. They probably don't take enough. But, you know, and I find myself tell my team, hey, look, I can tell you're grinding. Take a week off. It'll be okay. This place is not going to burn down. And my team is good with me on that. But what I truly do is I don't micromanage. I've really trained myself on that. I don't care whether you are a small organization or a big organization. You could be a $2 billion credit union, or you could be a $2 million credit union. Trust the people that you have in place to do their job. Check in with them, know what's going on, but let them do their job. Don't get involved. Like with my team, I meet with my executives once a week. It's a 2-hour meeting. Give me some feedback. What's going on? What do you need from me? I'll ask questions. You know, I'll have one-on-ones with them throughout the week. That's usually 30 to 45 minutes at most. I meet with the consolidated senior leadership team once a month. It's a multi-hour meeting where everybody just kind of says, this is everything we're working on. And that's it. I check in as I need to. So what I do is I focus my time in thirds. About a third of my time is on day-to-day operations within the credit union. A third of my time is more into community-based efforts, trying to involve myself in different community efforts. And a third of my time is more on advocacy for our credit union efforts through government. So whether it's going out and doing advocacy efforts or just trying to educate myself, sending out emails, letters, speaking with our trade associations, going to DC or talking to people in Columbus. But what I'm trying to do is make sure that I am educated and on the forefront of the different things that are affecting my industry. So I don't feel the burnout because I'm not allowing myself to get into the micro. Mm-hmm. I'm not into the granular. I allow my fantastic team to take care of that business. If I start to see areas where we're becoming deficient, I might start to tiptoe in there and say, hey, what's going on? Give me a little more detail. And then a lot of times they're like, this is what's going on. This is how we're correcting it. And then, okay, I know they got it. Then I take the step back. Mm-hmm. And this has been what works. And this is why we've been together for so long. Trust them. I am a macro manager, so I'm able to take that step back. I can go home and sleep at night. I can spend time with my wife and kids.
You know, those are wise words of don't micromanage, because they also allow you to scale as well. Mm-hmm. They give you the ability to scale. What strategies did you use to start to scale, to go from a negative balance to a positive balance? Is there some of them that you can share with us that you use in order to do that and expand maybe different services and products as well?
This episode is powered by Onist AI. Onist's optimized onboarding process and minimized documentation result in an expedited and seamless financing journey for clients, enhancing their contentment and commitment. Through identity verification, financial data validation, and creditworthiness assessment, our software empowers companies to make well-informed financing choices, bolster application speed and customer uptake by 30%, and cut operational costs by a significant 70% with Onist AI. For more information, visit onist.ai.
You can't scale if you have bad culture. I don't care how great of a strategy you have when it comes to products and services. If your culture inside your own walls stink, it doesn't matter. They won't promote it. They won't be brand loyalists. They won't be ambassadors. You need to create internal brand ambassadors first. Without that, there is no strategy that can win. So you start there. So what we did was that first, and then we really promoted our lending. We had plenty of liquidity, and that's where we started to really grow. What we did through that was we started just asking our own membership. You know, we're helping out here. Do you know anybody else? And it was just kind of a referral campaign. Then we just picked up in marketing. You know, let's invest more in marketing. Let's get the word out. And we just started to naturally grow. Then it was like, okay, what do we do now? Well, our phone started to ring. People wanted to start calling me and saying, hey, I'm getting ready to retire. What do you think about our credit union coming into you guys and merging? Well, in 2022, and I love to talk about 2022 because my staff didn't kill me. Let's talk about trust. I'm about to tell you what trust is. We opened a brand new de novo branch, and we completed 3 mergers in 1 calendar year.
Ooh.
And my team didn't kill me. I thought they might. I thought they might, but they didn't. Well. And we were able to scale, you know, tens of millions of dollars. I want to say we probably, with between 2019 and 2022, we doubled in size. We continue to grow little by little. We believe in controlled, sustained scaling. Mm-hmm. Anybody can go out and have rapid growth and scaling. You're begging for trouble if you do that. And this is one thing I would just really advise CEOs on. Mm-hmm. Be very careful in which the rate you scale. You do want to grow. You do want to get bigger. You want more resources, but you do not want to grow too rapidly. So to get back to what your original question is, so the things that we are trying to focus on, we want to focus on in this growth, and we think is our next stage of growth, is focusing on meeting the member where they want to be met. And we think that the strategy is not just digital and it's not just a traditional brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. We think that there is a place in the middle, and we are focusing on a technological piece that is going to be more focused on kind of an upgraded ATM. They're called ITMs, interactive teller machines, but strategically placed mm-hmm. to where you can use it as an ATM. You put your card in, get cash, whatever. But if you need to talk to somebody, it's just like this. Put your card in, ask for a representative, and you can have a conversation. And they can run a teller transaction. They can run a payment. They can do everything you need them to do. And you don't need to have a brick and mortar to do it. And what we can do is we can have QR codes. You can do a loan application. Or like if you want to just do it from your phone, take a picture, do it from your phone. We use technology to where you can essentially do most of a loan application or a new account application in 45 seconds. And so we figure out what is the, how can we be fast? How can we be efficient? How can we be where the consumer wants to be? And how can we be convenient? And so you think about, it doesn't matter what generation you're in, you want speed, ease, performance. All right. Can you get it done for me? Can you do it fast? And is it easy? When you meet that criteria, you're going to become a preferred business. And that right now is where our mindset is. If we can continue to focus in and harness in on that, that will help us continue down our path of being different than. And that is kind of what our unofficial mantra is just that we are unapologetically different, and we're going to focus on a digital transformation with a traditional touch. We're not leaving you. We are still going to be face to face with you, but it might be through a camera. We're still going to have traditional branches, but we're going to try and saturate areas where we're a little bit more, let's say, technological. We're a little bit more camera and digital, but you can still have that interaction face-to-face.
Those are wise words. And, I wish I had a lot more time to speak with you. You have a lot of insights and a lot of stuff to share with our listeners. And I would love to have you back at another time. We're at the end of our episode, and I would like to thank you so much for your time and sharing your insights. I believe our listeners have got a lot of value out of this. I know I have, personally. So thank you very much for the tremendous conversation, Mike. I really appreciate your time, and I hope we can have you back again soon.
Hey, it was my pleasure. I'd love to do it again.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Mind Matters.